be a lady tonight. Luck be a lady tonight.
NFL podcast, we start to take a look at week two, but before we do that, let's introduce the voice you're hearing is me, Todd Furman. I'm joined by my co-host, Payne Insider. Payne, what did you see this weekend from the NFL? Surprised by anything that jumped out?
I wasn't surprised by a lot of things. I know the recreational bettor, casual bettor will look to all the underdogs covering, but I think for our purposes, we were on a lot of those sides, Todd, you and myself. We did see some under action come in. I think 8 of the 14 games went under the spread, under the total. And if you really got the best number, there was a couple games there, the Sunday night one, and then the Jacksonville-Philadelphia game. If you got the optimum number, those went under as well. So just like we talked about in our first podcast, I thought there'd be an overreaction to the new rules, and I think that is what led itself to week one.
Now, before I guess we get into some of the specifics, as I tend to agree with you on a lot of that stuff, it was always good to see underdogs biting. I know a lot of the sports books out here in Vegas benefited immensely from those results, leading Jay Cornegay to even say this may be one of the best opening weekends he's ever had in his time at the LVH. You look at the games tonight, probably a good place to start, and the Lions, we've seen this number go all over the place. Detroit opened as a 4-point favorite, number ballooned as high as 6.5, and then, of course, this morning, we start to see money come pouring in on the Giants at this point. We know there are groups on both sides of this game, but what do you make of this line move, trying to figure out how the Giants will adopt this new West Coast-style offense, given Eli's struggles all preseason?
I think this pretty much points itself and lends itself to a rule is, you know, we are looking at the teams, but we're also very focused on the number, and the number does matter. Detroit opened 3.5, 4, and I think that was probably a good entry point. At 6.5, we saw a lot of groups take back, buy to 7, that second largest key number. So I think those are some things to look for. Detroit, historically, you know, when we talk about it as pro bettors, this is not a team pro bettors like, just a lot of mental midgets on that side of the ball. They always seem to make a mistake, shoot themselves in the foot, but we know right now the Giants' offense is a train wreck, so that will be interesting to see. Right now at 4.5, I'm not in love with either side. If you're able to get Detroit, maybe 3, 3.5, that's probably the way to look. Giants, obviously, potentially a buy at 7, that was probably a good number too. So I think right now it's settled in at a pretty efficient market point.
Yeah, real interesting, too, when you look at the numbers right now. And, of course, we encourage people of all ability levels that are betting on football to shop around for different numbers. You have the opportunity to lay 4.5 in this game and take 6, depending on where you're shopping around, whether it's here in Las Vegas where I am or anywhere in the offshore world. So, people, it'll be fascinating to see where this number ends up settling. Do you really think that we're going to see a 4 as a consensus here, or do you think we start to see some more money on the Lions? Of course, Monday afternoon, a couple hours to kick off. I mean, my gut tells me 4.5, 5 is probably where this price is going to end up.
Yeah, right now, if you look across the board, betting percentages are fairly even. 4.5 seems like a decent number right now. I think the only way this gravitates one way or the other is if we do see sharp money on a specific side. I think 4.5 is the right number based on bet percentages and how the money's coming in right now.
Now, from a game where it looks like it's pretty balanced to the nightcap where the line move tells as big a story as probably any game we've seen played through week one already, Arizona actually listed as a 3.5-point favorite when this number opened, and since then it has been a steady flow from some of the sharpest bettors out there coming in on San Diego, so much so that we expected resistance at 3. It didn't quite come. 2.5 now the consensus with Arizona listed as a short favorite for their opener against the Chargers.
Yeah, this is going to be a side that the books are going to hate. Obviously, it's the last game of the week, 10-25. It's the bailout game, essentially. And not only do you have the professional bettors coming in, taking 3.5, even taking 3. Right now, as it looks like the public's on San Diego as well. A lot of question marks for Arizona, a lot of injuries on that side of the ball. And one thing that really scares me when you're looking at this Arizona side, yeah, it's opening night, it's a home opener, it's Monday Night Football, but everything that you read around Arizona was the offense looks light years better than the defense, which is scary in itself when it's led by Carson Palmer. A lot of injuries up the middle for Arizona on defense. When you lose a defensive tackle, a linebacker, and a safety, that's tough to replace up the gut of that defense.
And, of course, the other big concern for Arizona is who will be carrying the football for him. Andre Ellington dealing with that foot issue as well. And like you alluded to, all those comments coming out there, if the offense was beating up on the defense, the offense didn't exactly wow during the course of the preseason. So it'll be fascinating to see if Philip Rivers and company can take full advantage. As far as the totals are concerned, I know we didn't hit on it for the Giants. Detroit sitting at 45.5, 45 right now, and 46. Of course, we saw some money on the San Diego-Arizona game get bet up a little bit. Either of those have any intrigue for you as far as predicting where these lines may close before kickoff later this evening?
Yeah, I think we'll obviously see the San Diego total continue to creep upwards. I know professionals are on the over in the late game as well. You know, the defensive issues with Arizona, San Diego's no world beater on that side of the ball. And again, it'll be the bailout game, so the over will probably be continue to hit. I think that will likely close 47. Might see some resistance at kick from the sharp guys, but they initially went over this game at open and continue to do so. Not so much on the first game, Giants-Detroit. We did see a small trickle of some under money come in about an hour ago, but that's just such a fast surface for me. I know the Giants, again, we talked about some offensive issues, and that's likely why we've seen the under money come in on there, but not a total I'm really looking at right now.
Yeah, I would probably echo your sentiments there. I know that we're both in agreement that the Chargers make the most sense of any of the sides available this evening, so it'll be fascinating to see exactly if all the steam was warranted and San Diego can go out there and take care of business in a late game, one that'll kick off 10:20 on the East Coast. Hopefully, you know, old men like yourself, Payne, are able to stay awake all the way through the second half.
I will be fast asleep by halftime. Hopefully, we wake up to a winner.
never a bad thing, something I'm familiar with outside of the waking up a winner part, just waking up to games from a soccer standpoint. I know you hit a little bit on you know, some of the things that you observed over the course of week one, the first 14 games of the schedule. When we look at some of the specifics, anything that really jumped off the page to you, teams that really surprised in a good way, in a bad way? I think Kansas City, for the casual fan, may be a bit of a surprise, but of course, as we talked about, one of the largest positions taken by the professionals going under their win total, 8.5.
You know, that game obviously was a big one that I like to key in on. For me, it was generally the entire AFC East. It's a division that I think most of the media, most of the public is down on. They only look at one team. It's Brady and Belichick, but that's the only team that didn't come away with a victory this week. Jets were impressive. The score not indicative of how much they dominated Oakland. The Bills squeaked away with a win on the road as a 7-point underdog. And the Dolphins, a side that we absolutely loved and talked up on our first podcast, absolutely dominated that game in the second half. Down 10 at half, absolutely pitched a shutout in the second half. So the AFC East gets a round of applause, a division that everyone thinks is owned by one team.
And I guess for me, the biggest surprise, if we're talking divisions as a whole, it's going to be the AFC South. Clearly four teams that we're not sure exactly what we're going to get out of them. Jacksonville looked like two different teams in the first half, building that 17-0 lead against Philadelphia, and then really imploding late, a tough beat for anybody that was sitting on the Jags plus 10. It's rare that you have, you know, a three-possession lead and can't cover with a double-digit underdog, but a 34-0 second half from Philadelphia may speak volumes about the Eagles' big plays and explosiveness. I guess for Indy, you saw a tale of two halves from them as well, 24-0 deficit they faced early in that game against Denver. They were able to come back and, you know, get within one possession, but I think a lot of that we can attribute to Denver playing more of a prevent defense. Teams who are going to do that and allow Andrew Luck to pick them apart are going to have their hands full all season long. Tennessee, I don't want to say Kansas City was ridiculously bad, but they were. Tennessee was equally impressive on the other side. Jake Locker showing quite a bit of poise, you know, spreading the ball around, seems to have developed a rapport with both Justin Hunter and Kendall Wright. I think as the season progresses too, we'll see more Bishop Sankey out there. And then, of course, the Houston Texans. Ugly, but a win is a win, and a game real interesting for them this week as they travel out west as a 3-point favorite to see if they can carry some of that momentum moving forward. But you talk about the Patriots earlier and wanted to go back to them. You at all surprised when you look at this opening number for their trip up north to take on Minnesota, where they're a 3.5-point favorite, depending on where you look. Yet on the look-ahead lines that we talked about, they were listed as a 6-point chalk against the Vikings before Sunday's games took place.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is an interesting one. I know out west in Vegas, in your territory, you know, it was a 4-point open. Pretty much offshore, it was a 3-point open. You know, some sharp money is on the Vikings. Is that, you know, set up? For me, when you look at this game, it opened, the look-ahead was 6, Patriots minus 6. So I think this is kind of a drastic overreaction. I know the Vikings really put it on St. Louis, but when you break down that game and you look at some of the box scores and you look at some of the numbers, it didn't translate to a blowout. The Patriots are very familiar, obviously, with Castle at quarterback. They don't lose back-to-back games too often. But really one thing that stood out to me when I watched this New England team, and I've kind of said it for a while now, there's not a lot of playmakers on the offensive side of the ball. Their offensive line isn't great. A lot of it is scheme. Gronkowski is playing at about 70%. He's literally a straight line runner at this point. I think he might have come back too soon. But they don't have a lot of receiving weapons. A lot of their stuff is generated out of the backfield. So this is a weak team. They're going to rely on their defense. So I can understand some of the move here, but I think three is a little short. I think the sports books are going to end up closing this roughly 3.5, and it's going to be lopsided. It's definitely going to be a lot of Patriots action from the public. And I'm not sure I disagree at three.
Yeah, early indications, like you said, it looks like it's going to be one of those trendy road favorites. New England probably in that same vein of the likes of Houston, at Oakland, most likely New Orleans, at Cleveland, and then, of course, Seattle, given their dominance of Green Bay, although some of that may change depending on what we see from San Diego. But I know we traded text during that game, and we'll get into a further breakdown of all the games, you know, later in the week. Minnesota, from a player personnel standpoint, if you can clog the middle and have linebackers that can cover in space, do you think that's the recipe for trying to look for opportunities to fade the Patriots, who did, for all intents and purposes, look pretty pedestrian in that second half when the Dolphins put it on them 23-0.
You know what was really interesting about that is I came into that game saying the Dolphins' weakest spot on the entire team was their linebackers. And lo and behold, they lost every single starting linebacker and played with backup the entire second half. It was really shocking to me that Brady couldn't take advantage over the middle. But that's really where they do most of their operating, backs out of the flats, tight ends over the middle. It was evident they went and got Tim Wright because they knew they needed to be able to attack that area of the Dolphins, and Gronkowski wasn't 100% healthy. I know he scored a touchdown. He put up some numbers. But literally, if you're able to get Gronkowski and kind of direct him to where you want him to go and make him cut right now, it really, really just hurts this offense. So it will be interesting to see. Obviously, Zimmer's a defensive mind. He's going to have a great game plan. But I just think Brady and Belichick are going to do enough in this game. They're very familiar with Castle, who's more of a game manager. So it will be interesting to see. I think Vince Wilfork will have a better game. He was absolutely dominated by Samson Satelli, which was absolutely shocking to everybody. But I think, right now it's early. But I think that number is just a little short. It's a massive overreaction, a three-point move. Now, I know we talk about this a lot. Most teams' greatest improvement comes from week one to week two, but that seems like a significant move for me.
I was going to say, it's hands down the biggest move from those look-ahead lines that we talked about that are widely available. You know, most of the numbers have stayed pretty consistent. We've seen a half-point move here or there. Of course, going back to the Titans, we saw a 1.5-point move there. Titans were forecasted as about a 2.5-point favorite widely available for Sunday's game. Now that number we look at as they take on Dallas at 4. You know, what do we make of the Cowboys in a game? You look at the final. But I watched that thing from start to finish and was more impressed, came away more impressed with Dallas, aside for some poor decision-making from Tony Romo, than I was with the 49ers in that spot.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. We always talk about this and we kind of do this segment, basically because you look at these box scores and it tells you, it paints you, a brighter picture. San Francisco is not impressive in the least bit to me. They score a defensive touchdown. Romo throws a pick inside the 5-yard line. And that right there is basically your 11-point spread that we saw. I was pretty, pretty pleased with what I saw from Dallas. And I wouldn't be shocked to see if they get a little money here late. I was pretty impressed. If the problem is Romo thinks he needs to go and win the game on every throw based upon his defense. But I thought the defense held up okay. And if he doesn't make any mistakes, they're going to be fine. Dez Bryant, a little question mark. We'll see if he's able to go, and I think they'll be fine moving forward. I don't think they even come close to the 8-win total, but I think they're better than people think.
Well, I think it's an interesting Tennessee team as well, too. You talk about going from being the hunter to now all of a sudden the hunted, a little bit of unfamiliar territory with maybe some increased expectations given how good they looked against Kansas City. I think the major takeaway for me with Dallas was that they actually stayed more committed to the ground game despite facing an early deficit. I mean, Tony Romo only threw the ball 37 times. DeMarco Murray looked excellent carrying the football, 22 times, 118 yards, and then did have that one touchdown. But you talk about San Francisco and how pedestrian they probably look with, I think is a fair assessment when you consider they built a 21-3 lead, and they only had one drive that they really did anything on. Of course, the one touchdown drive went 3 plays, 80 yards, the other two beneficiaries of poor Romo decisions. At the same time, the Bears go out west for the Sunday night game. Clearly, a game that, you know, two marquee franchises, and that number goes from 6.5 to 7. You know, what do we make of Chicago from what we saw against Buffalo? They look like a hot knife through butter on the opening drive, and then really bogged down for extended periods against the Bills team. A lot of people, outside of some of the sharp guys, thought weren't going to be that competitive.
Yeah, I'm not high on the Bears. I think they have issues, obviously, on defense. I think they'll contend right there with Dallas for being one of the league's worst. But at this number, at this price, it's definitely something you'd probably look to consider Chicago. I'm not in love with, obviously, the cross-country travel and the late start out west, so that's something you need to factor into your handicapping. Not necessarily teams always going west to east for the early start, but, you know, teams going from that east and central time zone to out west for the late start. But, you know, I think this probably is a buy point on Chicago. But it's just not a team that I like. Offensively, we know how good they are, but will Jay Cutler make that mistake? He did in the Buffalo game. They finally regained some momentum, tied it up at 17. They're driving again, and he manages to throw a pick to a lineman for his first ever. He's been in the league for decades. So that's Jay Cutler for you. And really, you know, we talk about that offense, and it is prolific, but it's on Jay Cutler not to make the mistakes. Last season, he had one of his best seasons. It was a QB rating near 87. Your league average is 85, so that's what this guy is. I'm not a Jay Cutler fan, so when you have a guy like that in a bad defense, it's just not a team I'm high on. But I think this number will potentially continue to rise. If it comes down, obviously, it's professional money on Chicago. So that's something to look for in the late game.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see if Mark Trestman realizes that Dallas was able to run the football, albeit the Cowboys in comeback mode most of the game, so San Francisco wasn't worried about giving up, you know, 3 to 4 yards a carry. But Matt Forte, of course, can be a valuable element, maybe shortening the game a little bit, giving the Bears a chance. Yeah, I've seen some over money initially come in on this one, 48 out to 48.5. And then, of course, I guess we talk about last year's AFC defending champions, Denver. A look-ahead number had them a 10.5-point chalk against Kansas City. That number ballooned out to 13. Well, you know, what do we make of the Broncos at this point in Kansas City? You know, how low is their power rating in the eyes of some of the professionals out there?
This is one of those teams that we're really down on. We've been down on them for a while. When you look at what they did last year, you know, they get out of the gates hot, but they didn't play anybody that had an above 500 record. They were lucked into situations where they faced 3 or 4 backup quarterbacks. So this was a team that we were been selling all offseason, opened 8.5 on the win total, all the way down to 8. We sold them again week 1. So that's one thing that, you know, I wanted to look at when we gauge that other game, that Tennessee-Dallas game. You know, is Kansas City that bad? And what I saw, they're that bad. They're without Dwayne Bowe. They don't have a ton of playmakers on that side of the ball. That said, this is a division game. This is a division game where you've started 0-1. At some point, 13, if this balloons out to 14, you're going to have to look at the dog in a division game like that. Denver's defense is vastly improved, but 14's just a massive, massive number here.
Yeah, I'm a little bit surprised to see that number reflect that, and imagine how much higher this number may have actually been had Denver held on to that large lead against Indy. You know, they walk out of there with a 3-touchdown victory. We could be talking about 13.5, 14 here. Going to be real tough for that casual bettor to walk to the window with confidence and back a Kansas City team who, as you alluded to, really lacks playmakers. You're going to need the emergence of the young tight end, Travis Kelce, out there. But without Dwayne Bowe, it was really an uphill battle for extended stretches, with the Titans just keying in on Jamal Charles, forcing Alex Smith to make decisions, more importantly plays downfield, which he really couldn't make. I will say one question that came up since we did record our first podcast last Thursday was in regards to home field advantage. And while I don't want to get too long-winded, we can delve back into this on Thursday. You know, how do the professionals view home field advantage when you talk about games being played in Jacksonville versus primetime atmospheres in the likes of New Orleans and Seattle? Is it safe to say that you can see anywhere from no adjustment made whatsoever as high as 5.5, 6 points in the modern-day NFL?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you nailed it. I think the problem is, you know, general stuff when it comes to betting. I hate general things. And when you talk about Jacksonville's home field advantage, we have it at 0. Most people will say a general rule is home field advantage worth 3. That couldn't be any further from the truth. We have Jacksonville at 0 points, and then we have somewhere in Seattle where, you know, it's 5.5, 6 points depending on the opponent. That's the other thing. It's just not the location, but it's also the opponent, and we saw that play dividends on Thursday night, where you get a Seattle team who's up against a rookie center in Green Bay, and we saw Aaron Rodgers, you know, kind of get in his face a little bit. So that's huge. When you have the 12th man, when you have home field advantage, when you have that kind of crowd behind you, and you have a rookie lineman like that, that's going to just play in the hands of Seattle. So anywhere from 0 to as high as 6, depending on opponent.
Now, to put you on the spot and not to share all your cards, since this is a marathon, not a sprint, for the casual gambler out there listening, trying to figure out whether he's doing his own power ratings or adjusting for home field advantage, who might be some of the surprises that the pros view as overly valuable in terms of home field, or that the people may think, oh, this is a great home field advantage, but you guys really don't see it changing a whole lot of things outside of maybe a point or two?
You know, it's a team I know well, and I kind of go back to the well, and it's the Miami Dolphins. This is a team that for a decade had been great against the spread on the road but couldn't win a dang game at home. And when you really look at, you know, new ownership coming in, Stephen Ross came out a while ago, and after their, you know, 1-15 season, no one was showing up to the games, obviously partly because of the weather, but they just weren't winning home games. And he came out 2-3 years ago and said, we need to start winning these games. And since then, they've gone 15-8 ATS at home. So I think what you're looking for is little pieces of information like that, and a market that's really low on the, you know, on a team. And the market really doesn't like Miami. Obviously, this week was different, but, you know, trying to find things like that, little motivational tools that you can use for home field advantage. And like we saw, Miami most recently wasn't playing well at home. You get a piece of information like that, and for me, Miami should be roughly now 2.5-3 range for their home field advantage, where 2 years ago you were looking at something similar to Jacksonville, right in that 0 to half a point range.
Yeah, I think, and you talk about Miami, a fascinating game this weekend against Buffalo, which, of course, you know, we'll touch on a little bit later in the week, to try and figure out if they can carry some of that momentum forward to teams who probably didn't see themselves both 1-0 after week one and a chance to, you know, grab firm control at 2-0 atop the AFC East. But, of course, if we gave away everything on Monday, we'd have nothing to talk about on Thursday. So, Payne, before we sign off, and we plead with our listeners to try and come up with a creative name, because all of you are a heck of a lot smarter than Payne Insider and myself to name this podcast. Any parting shots to try and get our folks through the course of week two as they begin to start their handicapping?
Yeah, I mean, I would dig right in. I would look to what we were using, look for some look-ahead lines. I think getting ahead of the market this week is big. And one thing that I would look at is look at these look-ahead lines, see how much they've moved, break into the box scores. And I know we've seen some movement on one, but I really think Tennessee is going to be extremely inflated. I know it's a home opener. I know the fans are excited after their week one win, but I think that was more a byproduct of how bad Kansas City is going to be this year. And I was really impressed with Dallas. So that's I would use that as a starting point. Dig into that game a little bit, because I think we'll see some professional money on Dallas at some point this week.
Great information as always, Payne. Looking forward to doing this, like we said, twice a week all throughout the NFL regular season and postseason to try and give people the best betting information they can have at their disposal. For Payne Insider, I'm your host, Todd Furman. You can follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider or me at Todd Furman. Looking forward to doing this again, and we'll be right back with you Thursday to cover some of the midweek movement as we begin to focus on week two and where some of that sharp money will start to destroy these numbers.